Hello and welcome back to Enterprise Linux Security, this time episode 114, and we're going to talk about the elephant in the room. When your batteries won't last through a particular period of time being a massive outage, something that a lot of people aren't really prepared for. How you doing, Zhao?
All good. As always, a pleasure being here with you, Jay. It's the kind of thing that doesn't happen every day, thankfully. But 28th of April, about 2 weeks ago at the time of recording, we had this massive blackout here in Portugal and Spain as well. It was countrywide, so it was actually pretty massive. It was not just a city or region or whatever. It was the entire two countries were affected by this, no power at all. It affected over 55 million people, so that's quite a lot. And yeah, it got some attention, you might say, from the media and from other people here in Europe as well. And it brought out some problems that most people don't think about when they're dealing with disaster recovery and disaster situations and all of that, especially in IT. And we're going to cover some interesting stuff that you might want to include into your disaster recovery plans and your crisis manuals if you have one. And yeah, this is going to be pretty interesting.
Sure is. And before we get into it, just wanted to mention a few things. If you like what's being done here on Learn Linux TV, be sure to support the channel. Some of the ways you could do that is by becoming a patron. You'll get access to ad-free content on Patreon and also the merchandise shop at merch.learnlinux.tv. My fiance and I came up with a bunch of ideas. Some of them are pretty funny, if I do say so myself, like a parody of the Big Bang Theory, Hash Bang Theory, which came out pretty nice. Also a parody of Golden Girls, the Golden Penguins, if you wonder what the Golden Girls look like as Linux Penguins, all kinds of weird but funny parody shirts, a Back to the Future shirt with Marty and the Doc as penguins, all kinds of cool stuff. And of course, the classics like apt install coffee, and now there's a DNF install coffee shirt as well. So all kinds of Linux-related shenanigans happening over at the merch shop at merch.learnlinux.tv. So check it out and support the channel. I'd really appreciate it. And with that out of the way, I think it's time to get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode.
Okay, so we're going to run through what actually happened. Interestingly, while it happened over 2 weeks ago, we still don't have the exact details on the root cause of this. It's pretty interesting that it's taking them so long to actually come out with information. Initially, when this started, when everybody lost power and we still had internet access on our mobile phones, more on this later, there were talks about this being some type of cyber attack and being some... Yeah, given the geopolitical situation everywhere right now. So it wouldn't be unexpected if it was some form of cyber attack that caused disruption to the power grid. In case you're wondering if this is just something that happened way over there, overseas, we don't really care that much about this in the US. A couple of years ago in Texas, you had the massive problem with your power grid there as well. People were losing power because it couldn't sustain the demand when everybody started turning on their heating and all of that. So this didn't just happen here. This is something that can happen everywhere. And on top of that, power demand is a massive problem right now, especially with AI being so power hungry. It's why most of the large companies are looking at data centers next to stuff like nuclear power plants where they can actually get a contract for all the power generation from those specific power plants going through their data centers. Power is a massive issue right now. This blackout was just shining an even brighter light on it. And okay, so right now what we think happened is that this was just a perfect storm of grid management issues. At 11:35 in the morning, suddenly, both Spain and Portugal lost power at the same time. Both countries' power grids are very interconnected, more so than with other European countries. Portugal's only land border is with Spain. Spain has another border with France. Apparently, southern France also was impacted by this. But the two power grids between the two countries are very interconnected. So a power surge or a drop in power generation in one inevitably will affect the other. At 11:35, there was the equivalent drop of shutting down at the same moment about six or seven nuclear power plants, all of them shutting down at the same moment. That was the drop that happened from 1 second to the next. And no power grid out there can sustain this. There are mechanisms that the grid has to deal with either massive demand increases or massive losses in generation. But at this scale, no power grid anywhere could sustain it. And funny thing, we all learned a lot about the power grid in the days after this because of all of the news stories that were covering it. And the power grid has this nice characteristic where demand must meet generation precisely at every moment in the power grid. When you turn on your light bulb in your room, a power plant somewhere has to start producing the 10 watts or 50 watts that light bulb requires at the moment that you turn on the light switch. So this has to happen constantly. And one of the reasons why the recovery process took so long, the blackout lasted for over 10 hours, which is a massive amount of time to be completely out of power in the entire country. The reason, one of the reasons why it took so long to restart this was that you can't just plug everything back in again and restart all of the power plants immediately when power fails, because precisely the demand and the power generation has to match at all moments. If you look around at all the stuff that you have plugged into the power outlets right now, the lights, your computers, your mobile phones that are charging, your AC units, your televisions, the refrigerator, everything, there's a spike in power demand when it gets turned on that doesn't happen during normal operations. Your computer will have a power spike when it's turned on, when all the hard disks are spinning up, when the fans are starting, and then it quiets down and power demand lowers considerably. So the reason why you can't just simply restart all the power plants is that it's impossible to meet that spike at the start and then immediately drop generation to meet the actual demand. So that was a massive problem throughout the day.
Yeah, the first thing when the power goes out, you know, I think most people do is they look across the street. Do they have power? Oh, no, they don't have power. So it's this area. And then finding out that it's your entire country, that's just incredible. And then the next question is, okay, when might the power be back on? Nobody can know that because of what you said. It's a process. But from an IT perspective, it's one thing at your house to lose the contents of your refrigerator, but it's quite another story when your entire business goes down and then you have to figure out, you know, what, if anything, can you actually do?
So going back to the power generation demand having to exactly match at all times, there are some mechanisms in the power grid that actually deal with spikes and attenuations in generation. One of the biggest mechanisms that is used is in hydropower plants, where instead of generating power, you will instead turn on pumps that pump water from the lower part of the river all the way back up to the reservoir so that it can be reused for power generation again. Running those pumps uses excess power in the grid. That's one mechanism that acts as a buffer when you have excess power running. There are other mechanisms. The power grid has many ways of handling these types of things, but all of those mechanisms, like giant flywheels that are spun up when there's too much power, and then the velocity with which it's spinning is used again to generate power when there's an increase in demand. All of those have a limit. With the drop that we saw at 11:35, there was no way that any such mechanism could have held. Another reason and another factor that's also very important when trying to recover from this situation is that when you're in a blackout situation, the power grid is effectively at the point where it has a process called the black start. It's starting from a blackout. There is a need to generate demand and power generation. There is a need to account for the peak demand on the equipment during startup, and not all power plants can start simultaneously. This requires careful orchestration between different power plants in different points of the country, because first they must meet demand, but they also need to have their phases in sync. The electrical current has a phase. It's what translates into the voltage that you use. It has to be perfectly in sync across all of the power plants that are connected to the grid, or else you'll have either spikes in power or attenuations, and your stuff can actually burn from this type of power spikes. So you can't just take the risk of injecting power plants into the power grid when they're not properly synced up. In a situation where you have no communications, getting all of the power plants running again is really tricky. There are emergency networks for first responders and for all of that, and that was what was used to synchronize all the different power plants in the countries, but it was a complex process. It took a long time, and lots of things happened during that time. Those 10 hours here in Portugal, it was actually a bit longer in Spain. The country is also larger than Portugal. So one of the things that happened during those 10 hours was that you lost basic power at home, so you couldn't turn on your televisions, you couldn't get the news, you didn't exactly know what was happening, but you still had mobile cell towers working, so you could still hit the internet and have calls on your mobile to other people, as long as you had batteries. Everybody was overwhelming the cell towers, everybody was reaching the internet through the cell towers, so they were running at full tilt when the blackout happened. Cell towers have batteries. Some of them have generators. Those batteries, those generators, are not designed to last 10 hours, as we painfully found out. So as time progressed and nobody had power, cell towers started dropping out. So at that point, you had absolutely no communication, no way to get the news, no way to know if this was being handled or if it was something that was going to take days rather than hours, or when it was going to come back at all. It's quite a situation, you know. It's probably the doomsday preppers' wet dream. It's what they prepare for. And you had two countries, 55 million people actually leaving the situation. It was really, really nasty.
Yeah, and considering communication is so important during any disaster, and that being the very thing that you're, or one of the things that you're losing pretty quickly, trying to keep in touch with anyone, you know, like you mentioned, first responders, we also think of data centers having to communicate. And then while they're bringing the power plants online, they're using alternative means of conversation just to help synchronize that, which I can't imagine how much work that is.
And if you think about it, it's probably when you don't have communications that it's more critical that the coordination between your IT teams becomes. Because you need to make sure that everybody in the team, the ones that are in the office and the ones that happen to be at home or somewhere else, need to know that they need to come back to the office or that they need to do something. It became a nightmare to coordinate everything. Even places, and large companies will have it, smaller companies will have UPSs, large companies will have generators, it depends a lot. There were a lot of generators, there were a lot of businesses still operating for a while. But getting people back to the office, if this happened to have been, and it lasted through some part of the night, but just getting in touch with the right people that know what to do in this situation was troubling for many people and for many companies. It was a real problem. Solutions like having your systems connected to UPSs, having generators, having backup batteries, all of that gives you limited duration. That the main goal of those systems, for most of them, is not business continuity. The main reason you have UPSs, you have backup batteries, is that it gives you the opportunity to do proper shutdowns of your equipment. It's not so that your business can continue to run on top of them. It's that you can that you can cleanly shut down your systems. You don't get corrupted data. You don't get broken transactions hitting your databases. You manage to get everything synced up, and then you shut down. And that's a problem due to the uncertainty. Since you don't know how long the blackout is going to last, you don't know what is being done to address it, you don't even know the reason why it happened in the first place, some really tricky decisions have to be made during that time.
Right.
Another interesting thing that happened, and you probably only become aware of these problems when you go through the situation, is that, okay, you have a generator in your company. You have it planned, you have fuel for a few hours or even a day or so. But that's actually a problem because generators depend on fuel being available. During the blackout, as we found out, gas stations were inoperable due to the power losses. The pumps that you use to pump fuel from the gas station tanks into your vehicles or into your containers that you use to take the fuel out, those need electricity to run. And The way that you had to find out if a given gas station was able to provide you with fuel or not was actually going there, because you had no communications, you had no internet, you had no way of contacting the gas station beforehand. So you actually had to drive to the gas station and find out, okay, this one is closed, now I need to go to another, and then I need to go to another, and then I need to go to another.
Right.
This is stuff that should be in disaster recovery plans. Where do I get fuel in the situation where I'll need it and everything is down? And many people right now have become aware of that is a problem. That is something that they need to address and need to consider. And yeah, the generator doesn't really help you if you don't have fuel to run it.
Right. And another thing that this really exposes is who has a false sense of redundancy. When you have, you know, a cloud environment and you have, let's say, multi-regions, and both of the regions are sub-regions within your local country, then your entire country goes dark, then that other data center doesn't help you at all because it's also down.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter if you have multiple power providers and multiple ISPs or multiple utilities, if they all fail at the same time. You might as well just have one because the result is the same. Another thing that people often don't realize, okay, we'll have a generator, we'll keep our systems running. Does it really make sense to keep them running? If all of your customers are local, if your business, if you operate on the internet, but all of your clients are local, say you're only selling to your country, for example, does it make a sense to keep running your systems if all of your customers are unable to reach them anyway? If there's no internet access to your customers, you might as well just shut them down.
Yeah, that's I completely agree with you. And sometimes I wonder why even companies that don't have a public presence, like an accounting company that's only open till 5 or something like that, keep their servers on 24/7 when nobody's even in the building. I've often thought that, you know, this is a side, so I'll make it quick, that if more people kept their servers on only during business hours, one, security is pretty great, because overnight it's hard to hack something that's not powered on. You'd have to break in and steal it at that point. And two, the power savings, not just for the company, but the entire grid. And this is more to your point. If the local clientele can't do business with you because they don't have a device to do business with you with, then you're just wasting power when everything is trying to come back online. And all these unnecessary systems are also trying to come back online. All at the same time, that's got to make the problem that much harder to solve for the people that work on the power grid.
Going back to your previous point about the cloud presence, this was actually an issue during the blackout. Many companies have a cloud presence. They store their services and their data elsewhere, in other countries, in other regions. But during the blackout, there was this situation where they had this cloud visibility gap. The cloud infrastructure was still available. Customers from overseas could still reach their services. Hackers could still try to hack their systems. But the teams, the local teams, were unable to reach the management and monitoring tools that they had on the cloud. They had no connection to the cloud. It was still available for others, just not for the IT teams. So having the cloud presence is great. It gives you that redundancy, its presence elsewhere, and its separation of concerns as well. But you need to account for this problem. If everybody is working at the office, if everybody is local to you, when those people in your team are unable to reach the cloud to do their management and their monitoring and their regular operations, nobody's looking at it. And that's a problem. You don't have access to your logs. You don't have access to your firewalls. Intrusion detection alerts don't reach anybody because you don't have internet to receive the alerts. There are windows where the attackers can operate undetected, and the security incidents go unobserved. This is a real problem. Nobody anticipates a blackout unless you're creating the blackout yourself. So there's that. But there was this gap in security. There was this gap in visibility where you were unable to monitor your systems, even though they were still running and they were still fine for everybody else. That was a problem.
And think of logging, for example. I've known companies, even the ones that use the cloud, they'll have some kind of a service to download log files locally in a secure server on premises. If the reason being, they might be nervous that the logs might get deleted out of the cloud, they still have the logs local. But in this situation, you have no ability to copy logs local. You have no access to the servers to monitor them, like you said. And then the threat actors decide to just truncate all of your logs. And since it's not being downloaded locally, you really don't have your logs. So they have pretty much no oversight there. You wouldn't even know they were there.
Another thing that became a reality during the blackout was that there's a resource prioritization in crisis situations like this. Critical services, hospitals, law enforcement, first responders, they get priority. It doesn't really matter if you think your company is the most important in the world. You're not up there in the priority. You're not going to get emergency fuel dump being taken to your business and to your generators because you're not high up in that list. Keep that in mind. If you have a problem getting fuel, then it's just better to shut down your systems than waiting to receive some help, some outside help, because you're not a hospital, you're not the critical service, you won't be high on the priority. So that was an eye-opener for some companies. There are also some additional points that everybody should consider if you're doing proper disaster planning. And again, this is the type of thing that you don't really understand the scope of and how everything actually stops during a blackout until you actually go through it. There are physical access challenges. Most facilities right now, most buildings, have electronic access controls. During a blackout, will the doors open somehow? Will you be able to enter your data center if it's local? Will the doors automatically unlock when they lose power? Will they keep locked? Do you even have a keyhole where you can put a physical key to unlock the doors, or do the doors no longer have that functionality? Do you have protocols on how to access the data center when there's no power? All of those are important questions that you really need to consider when you're preparing your disaster recovery plans, because until you go through a situation like this, that's not a problem that you think about.
Yeah, it's funny because I've actually been through the door access issue, and I've told this story before, so I guess this is for the new listeners that haven't heard it yet, and I'll keep it brief. I remember going to work at the office I worked for at the time, and then when I drove up, I was running a few minutes late, but I noticed like all the employees were outside the door. Like the entire workforce is outside the door. So I walk up there. And basically the situation was, well, it's an electronic door lock and nobody can get in the building. So we were all waiting outside for 45 minutes for the janitor to come in. And it was my job to figure out why the door lock failed. Because in this case, it wasn't power. Okay, something else caused the door lock system to go offline. And it was because they were running it from a Windows 98 laptop that hadn't been backed up and has been running for God knows how many years. And the hard drive decided to finally die. And then that happened, we couldn't get in. Obviously, that's not that big of a deal because it was just that one building and we only had to wait 45 minutes. By comparison, what was it, 12 hours for this blackout, I think it was?
Over 10 hours in Portugal, more than that in Spain.
Yeah, so that's obviously a lot worse. And like you said, unless you go through these situations, you don't really think about, well, what if the door, I can't get into the building? What if the cooling system, dies and everything is, too hot. It's a sweltering heat. And obviously that's not going to be, the servers aren't running themselves to generate heat, but you start to think about all these different things. And, it really means that a lot of us need to look at our action plan and just fill in the gaps. Because I guarantee you the majority of people listening have gaps, not for any reason that they're to blame for. It's just human nature. Sometimes you just don't think of things, and then it takes the misfortune of another country to get you to think about it.
And it's interesting because you might have an action plan for a situation, a crisis situation, where person X and Y are supposed to go back to the office regardless of the time, regardless of their position, and they're supposed to do some actions in the office. Have you considered that they might be unable to enter the building? Because that might be a problem. That might be a problem in a crisis situation. They might be unable to enter the building and do whatever they're supposed to be doing. So, yeah.
Right.
These things that until they are a problem you don't think about, yeah, those are the ones that bite you. Another thing here. First of all, and we've discussed this in the past when we talked about disaster recovery plans, having offline documentation. If you have the best recovery plan, but it's on in somebody's workstation and there's no power to turn it on, then it's just as well not having that plan because it's unreachable and nobody can act on it. So having a printed copy of the latest version of your recovery plan, that's great. Include information of how long the UPS and the generators will protect you so that you have some estimates of how fast you need to act or how cool you can be during the crisis situation because you still have an hour or two on the generator. Make sure you check the fuel level on your generator regularly. Sometimes there are leaks. Sometimes it just dries up. If it's unused for a long time, make sure it's there's maintenance on those generators. Have a recovery sequence planning. You need to prioritize the stuff that needs to be shut down first, cleanly. This includes shutdown sequences. This includes order startup sequences. This includes when to shut down the network equipment. You don't want to shut it down too early or you lose access to the systems. You need to make sure that you're properly shutting down your network storage. You need to know how to shut down properly your network storage. Most people don't know because they have never had the reason to shut it down. So it's been running since it's been deployed and you don't know that there's even a shutdown command. You need to know that before you try to recover the systems because you'll have that data corruption if you don't shut it down cleanly. Pro tip, been there, done that. Establish alternative communication protocols. This is something that, again, nobody went through this before, nobody planned for this, but alternative communication systems, even if it's just for critical personnel, satellite phones are important. Hardly anybody has them, but that was something that could have helped with communication and getting the team synchronized and working together. If critical people had those phones and kept them charged, it might have helped some teams to properly go through this. Having predefined meeting points, having a rule that says that if something like this happens, if the worst comes to pass, then everybody needs to report back to the office regardless of the time. We'll pay overtime, but get back to the office because we need every hand on deck to be able to do what we need to do when this happens. Even if that's not the rule, even if just one person or two need to be back to the office, but make sure that everybody knows that that's the case. Make sure that who needs to know actually knows it so that it doesn't happen that the next day, oh, nobody came back and the system just shut off when the power ran out or when the fuel went out or the UPS shut down. So now we have to restore 200 or 300 systems that were shut down uncleanly and there's errors and everywhere. That's a problem. Keep in mind the human factor under stress. This is critically importantly, we saw this play out in real time when during the blackout, people were freaking out. Nobody knew why it was happening. Nobody knew the scope of this, the reason behind it, but we knew that it was affecting multiple countries. Given the geopolitical situation, and again, I'm not overstating this, people were freaking out. A blackout happening at the same time across multiple countries, given the state of things right now, people, the weirdest scenarios were playing on people's minds. It happens. It's human nature. IT people are not different than others. Under stress, in a critical situation like this, IT people will make different decisions than if they're calmly looking at Google and looking up information on how to do this and that. In this situation, all they had to rely on was unclean information, no ability to reach the internet, so it was only their experience and their expertise that was guiding them throughout the whatever they were trying to do. It might not be the best way, and the decisions might not be the best and might be different from other times. Keep that in mind during your planning. Don't rely on overly complex scenarios that you need to go through to shut down systems or that, or go through other motions. Keep it as simple as possible. And what I was saying about shutting down your network storage, this will affect your supply chain. This affected the supply chain. You couldn't reach your vendors. If you rely on your vendors to do some type of procedure on your own systems during a particular scenario like startup or shutdown or something like that, and you're unable to talk to the vendors, then you can't do that particular operation. Keep that in mind. Try not to rely on external activities or external agents during a situation like this because they might be unavailable. this is also impacting them, so they might not be able to help you, not through malice or spite, but because they are just in the same boat as you.
Right. Yep. And you can have a situation literally where your country is having no power issue at all. And then you go to, you know, your build pipeline, you go to build a new system or deploy a new server, and it needs to install a third-party library or application. And that third-party library or application is on a repository on a server in the affected country. And then if you didn't cache that locally, now you can't even build systems. So imagine having a big software release where your servers are getting hammered and now you can't even scale anymore. I mean, there's just a lot of weird situations that can happen from something like this.
Another thing that came to light was that remote, keep in mind, I'm all in favor of remote work. I did it for many years. I really like it. But remote work has other complications in a blackout like this. If you're in the same building, if you're on an office and the networking team is on the next door, and then you have the database guys on the door after that, if you lose power, you just stand up, walk out to the next room and talk to them, and you coordinate with them. If you're doing remote work, you can't reach anybody. Keep that in mind if you're requiring coordination between different members of the workforce. It's really challenging. You need to have proper protocols, as we painfully learned. A way to approach this, a way to actually go through this, is through a tabletop exercise. Highly recommend this. It's a zero infrastructure scenario. The idea is that you sit your team around the table and you start from this simple scenario. How do we recover? How do we cleanly shut down when there's nothing else outside, when there's nothing running, when there's no power, no communications, no internet, when we can't talk to anybody else? How do we act? How do we coordinate? If it happens through the night, how do we get people back in the office? Who needs to know? Who needs to be here? Do they have a clear pass from wherever they're sleeping all the way back to the building? Do they have to go through toll booths so that won't work without power? Do they have to go through some type of mass transit that won't be operating? Keep that in mind during the planning stage.
Yep.
Who makes decisions when the leadership isn't reachable? This is important. If your manager happens to leave, happens to be the one that lives furthest away from your workplace, set a clear rule. Everybody waits until the manager is here, and that's a perfectly fine choice if that's what you go for, or there is somebody else empowered to make critical decisions on the go, executive decisions to act within an emergency. That's something that needs to be clearly defined, because the next day when the emergency is over, people will look back and say, why did this happen if nobody was here to say that this could have happened? And this is both a safeguard to you, if you're not the manager, the person who should be making the decisions, but it's also a way to make sure that during a crisis, everybody knows what they need to be doing.
Right. And think about how things are interconnected when it comes to your systems as well, because the example I like to, or analogy example I like to give, is a download server. Let's just say you're a company that your business is providing very large download files. Okay. So in this situation, you have at least a web server, a database server, and a storage server, okay? So you start to think about when you bring these systems back up, you're not going to bring up the web server before the database and the storage server. You want the database server to be running and the storage server to be running before you turn on the web server and start receiving requests. And then when it's the opposite and you're trying to shut things down, you want to shut down the web server so that the database server and the storage server stop getting requests. And then once you do that, you can shut down those servers. And you just think about how your systems are interconnected. It's not often the case that you have this one big server that does everything. And yes, I know some do, but most of the time you have these split off into different categories of servers. And one server might require another. And if that server comes online before the server it needs to access comes online, then you have logs filled with errors and it just doesn't play out very well. So just think about how things are interconnected, but also think, put a scoring system on it. For example, you know, ask your team, what are the most important servers? Like on one to scale of 1 to 10, right? Just rank each of them. Like you might have a server that's not important at all and it'll take you 5 minutes to load or redo just because it was used by one developer for one specific thing. That's not important. Okay. You don't really care about that. It's not even public facing. Think about what's public facing. you know, what's the most critical, what services would cost you the most money if they were offline, then you need to bring those online faster if you can. And you think about that scoring system. So that way, you not only know the order in which to turn things on, turn things off, you also know the importance level as well. So all of your team members know what the most critical infrastructure happens to be.
One of the things that happened, and it touches on your point, one of the things that happened was that the network connecting the ATM machines to the central repositories at the banks and the databases that handle the accounts and all of that kept running perfectly fine. Only the ATMs lost power, so it was essentially useless. Nobody could get money from the ATMs because the ATMs themselves were not running, even though the network underlying it was perfectly fine. Did it need to be up if nothing was being connected to it and couldn't be used? Again,
right?
Maybe something to consider for the next one. Hopefully not. but yeah, it's the type of tricky questions that only come up when you're in the situation or you're deeply thinking about the problem. But it's something that can happen, and it's very likely that will happen again. Other things that need to prepare for, and that tabletop exercise should worry about. Who is doing what? Have that precisely written down, and cannot stress this enough. The problem with making decisions that I previously talked about, that's very real. You really don't want to have three or four different people trying to shut down the same systems or trying to start up the same system, because they will conflict with each other. They will bring to light new issues that you're not preparing for. And that's the last time that you, the absolutely worst moment that you could be handling new problems. Everything has to work smoothly and everything has to be properly tested. And all the shutdown procedures have to be nailed down completely so that nothing new and unexpected happens then. You don't have neither the ability to look up errors nor the ability to properly discuss how to address them. So you will eventually make mistakes. Try to avoid that and keep things simple.
Exactly.
Another thing, especially for large teams and very disaggregated teams spread out geographically, how do you verify that whoever is connecting to your systems is actually who you're supposing to be when you have electronic means not being available, when you don't actually have cell phone communication with that person and can just call them up and make sure that whoever they claim to be is actually who they are? Maybe they don't have their two-factor authentication available because it lost power. It's on their phone and their phone lost their batteries and now they can't connect to something. Is there a workaround that they can use in that situation?
Yep.
How do you assess damage without your monitoring tools? Maybe your monitoring tools are on the cloud and you're trying to recover your local systems, but now you don't reach the monitoring tools because there's no internet access. Do you have manual fallback procedures? This is also very important. If you happen to have a procedure where you need to document every single change, and something like this happens, where you don't have an automated system to register it, you should have a way of knowing that you need to write down what is being done at every step of the process. And you need to know who is supposed to be writing that down. That's important, say, for compliance reasons, but that's important for just making sure that everything is being done properly as it should. Another important point, and this goes back again to the remote work part. This just make it blatantly obvious that having all of your team members in one location and that location gets hit by something massive like this is probably not very good for business continuity. You might want to recruit somebody overseas. You might want to have a couple of people working from another country, and that's perfectly fine and would have been great for cybersecurity teams and IT teams that have a cloud presence and couldn't reach the cloud. Those people from other countries, they could have helped in that situation. So, yeah, keep that in mind. That's helpful.
Yeah, sure is. Even local data centers I worked at, we had a individual that was a contractor just to go in the data center and check it out, to be our eyes and to be on scene and having that local help. When we're all geographically dispersed, we have somebody local to the data center that can get eyes on it. I mean, even something as that could be very helpful in the simple sense. But more to your point, though, I can't stress the importance enough of making sure everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing. Because you need to know who's doing what and that you could count on them to do it. Because you're not going to have any contact to know that they did or did not do the thing that they're doing are supposed to be doing, because you can't even contact them. Your phones don't work. You can't email them. You have no communication. So you just have to know, you know, who's doing what and that they're going to do it, and then do your part as if the other person did theirs and follow through the instructions to the letter. You know, it's not the time to get creative. It's a policy that hopefully was, you know, gone through the tabletop exercise and maybe some role play scenarios or something to just really try to understand what you're doing and then make sure that it's being done. And then everyone carries out their piece of the puzzle. And then when the communications are restored, you can convene, verify, and test your systems. And hopefully everything's fine from that point forward. But something like this, it really does make you think, because, again, communication is the most important thing. And it's also what you don't have.
It's absolutely not what you don't have, as we painfully learn. And this is just the final idea here from me. Test this out. You can run the tabletop exercise. You can make sure that you have everything written down. Get approval from management. And, okay, we need one day, a couple of hours, where we're going to test our disaster recovery plan and make sure that it actually works as we're expecting it to, because you will have surprises. But the way that the test situation happens is that when you get surprises there, you can actually work around them and fix them so that it doesn't affect you when the real thing happens. You need to make sure that your plans actually work. It's not just something you've written down. Test them out. Make sure that your generator says it will sustain whatever load you're getting him for 10 hours. Make sure that it's actually 10 hours that it will help you. Or else you're counting on 10 hours and after a couple of minutes it just shuts down because there's no more power, no more fuel. Make sure you know that before you actually need it.
Yep, absolutely agree. So I think that about covers it for this topic. It's a doomsday topic, but an important one, because, I mean, you know, this again, I know we've said this before, but this is huge. You got to be prepared for this. And if you think this won't happen to you, I can guarantee you everybody living there didn't think it was going to happen to them.
Yeah. It was a doomsday scenario that we actually lived through. Nobody was expecting something like this to happen. I mean, the last time something remotely close to this happened was over 20 years or something like that. And with a weird explanation at the time as well. Apparently, it was some time of stork that had like a 30 feet wingspan or something and short-circuited to power lines.
Oh, wow.
Nobody bought that explanation either then. But again, it happened 20 years ago. Nobody actually remembered it. And the internet and all the interconnectivity and the communications that we use today were not a thing back then. This is important. This is something that really goes into, affects everything that you do and everything that you expect, both from the society standpoint, where all the services break down, all you can't get money, you can't get fuel, you can't go anywhere, you don't have information about what's happening. And then there's the business side and there's the work side of what you're doing, depending on lots of external things that you don't realize, and those things go away immediately. And just on one second to the next, nothing else is there.
Right.
So yeah, try to have some planning. Some planning is better than no plan, as most people here and finally realize there. But have the plans, test them out, try to see how your team will react with a situation like this, and work around the kinks that you find during that process. It's a better time to fix the problems than when you actually need to face something like this.
Yep.
That was it. Thank you very much to everybody who joined. Hope this was helpful. Hope nobody else has to go through something like this, but if you do, at least you'll have some glimpse of what to expect. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you guys so much for watching and or tuning in via a podcatcher app. We really appreciate it. We'll be back here again next week, and we'll see you then.